Genesis 18. The Lord appeared to him in the plains of Mamre, and he sat in the tent door in the heat of the day, talking about Abraham. He left up his eyes and looked, and lo, three men stood by him. And when he saw them, he ran to meet them from the tent door, bowed himself toward the ground, and said, My Lord, if now I have found favor in thy sight, pass not away, I pray thee, from thy servant. So Abraham sees three, the Bible says three men. But Abraham is familiar with the appearance of Jesus. And so when he sees three men, as he draws closer, he realizes and he notices that one of them is the Lord. And he invites them to come in. He says, let me wash your feet, make yourself at home, and let me go get some food. And so he runs in and he tells Sarah, get some bread together. And he runs out to the field and he chooses, I think it said a calf. Yeah, verse 7, a calf. And got one of his servants, hey, clean this real quick. Just dress it and get it ready. Now, how long does that take? How long does it take you to make bread? How long does it take you to dress a calf and cook it? So all day. So all day, they're resting and they're preparing. And, you know, you have to imagine that they've traveled a great distance, or at least that's the impression that's given. Excuse me. So the impression is that they've traveled a distance, but when they get there, there's no restaurant. And so they have to start fresh and make all this stuff. And it takes the better part of a day. We read these things in 12 words. We get an idea of what's happening. But the time is much greater. And we need to keep that in perspective as we read the Bible, always. Verse 8, he took butter and milk and the calf which he had dressed, set it before them, and he stood by them under the tree, and they did eat. They said unto him, Where is Sarah thy wife? He said, Behold, in the tent. He said, I will certainly return unto thee according to the time of life, and lo, Sarah thy wife shall have a son. So she's past childbearing age. We know that. But he says, I will restore her body to that point where she can bear a child. And Sarah heard it in the tent door, which was behind them, verse 11. Now Abraham and Sarah were old and well stricken in age, and ceased to be with Sarah after the manner of women. Therefore Sarah laughed within herself. Okay, did you remember what happened last week when God told Abraham that? Verse 17 of chapter 17, he fell upon his face and laughed. And now Sarah laughs, but she didn't laugh out loud. She just thought, that's hilarious. Verse 12, Sarah laughed within herself, saying, After I am waxed old, shall I have pleasure? My Lord being old also. So it's not just her, it's him. And the Lord said unto Abraham, Wherefore did Sarah laugh, saying, Shall I of a surety bear a child which am old? Is anything too hard for the Lord? And we need to keep that in mind. You know, these things that we've prayed about and mentioned in our prayer request this morning are impossible with us. Even with all the medicine we have, all the treatments we have no guarantees. And even if we can extend life through medication, I mean, there's all kind of medication you can make the heart beat. But can we really and truly make someone alive? Can we really restore their health? And, you know, some of the requests this morning are people who have been to doctors. Remember that woman who had spent all of her living going to see doctors and still wasn't cured till she touched the hem of his garment. So there's a limit to what we can do. And we look at this and she laughs because she's, you know, and this was way back then. And she just laughed. She said, no way. That's impossible. I'm too old to have children. We're not just talking about raising them. She's going to have one. Verse 14, at the time appointed, I will return unto thee according to the time of life, and Sarah shall have a son. Sarah denied, saying, I laughed not. Did she laugh? But did she laugh out loud? So she thought, just because I thought about laughing, I didn't laugh. So what do we know about this? They didn't hear her laughing, but the Lord knows our thoughts. The Lord knows those imaginations we have when we think, that's crazy. He knows that. And so, was it a lie? She didn't laugh out loud, but she laughed inside, and God knew it. But she was afraid, and he said, nay, but thou didst laugh. The men rose up from thence, verse 16, looked toward Sodom. Abraham went with them to bring them on the way, and the Lord said, shall I hide from Abraham that thing which I do? So in their custom, you know, it's a matter of fellowship, the relationship that Abraham had with God. But it's also their culture that they would lead them on their way. When people leave your house, how does that go? You're all sitting in the living room or sitting at the table, and they say, I'm going to go. And you say, all right, see ya. And they show themselves out. Maybe. Depends on who it is, right? And maybe you see them to the door. Come again. Or maybe you see them to their car. See you next time. I mean, it just depends. Well, in their culture, he walked with them some distance on their journey to make sure that they knew where they were going and such as that, just to be friendly. And the Lord says, should I tell Abraham this thing? Which I do. Verse 18, seeing that Abraham shall surely become a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall be blessed in him. I know him. He will command his children and his household after him, and they shall keep the way of the Lord. So I know about Abraham that his home, that his parenting is going to be fine. He's going to do what's right. He's going to bring them up in the ways of God. And they shall do justice and judgment, that the Lord may bring upon Abraham that which he has spoken of him. So he considered telling Abraham this thing. Do you think you need to know everything God knows about your future? About the future? And so he asked the question. Verse 20, the Lord said, because the cry of Sodom and Gomorrah is great, their sin is very grievous. Imagine what cries coming up now. The sin of the world, the sin of the church. Verse 21, I'll go down now and see where they have done altogether according to the cry of it, which is come unto me. If not, I will know. The men turned their faces from thence and went toward Sodom, but Abraham stood yet before the Lord. Abraham drew near and said, wilt thou also destroy the righteous with the wicked? I mean, Lord, is there nobody there worth saving? Look around. Think about it. We paint with broad brushes, broad strokes sometimes, and we put people in classifications. And Abraham felt like that's what God was doing here. You're judging a whole city, two cities, metropolis. I mean, they're big, you know, big cities. And you're going to destroy all of them? Is there nobody good in that city? Nobody? Verse 24, and I know you probably have heard this before. Peradventure there be 50 righteous within the city. Wilt thou also destroy and spare not the place for 50 righteous? Is 50 a big number? It's a pretty good crowd. But when you're looking at a city of thousands, it's not a lot of people. But if I could just find one church of 50 righteous people, so would God spare Tallahassee based on our living? If he looked here, if he looked at Capitol Heights, would he find among us a third of our membership righteous? Would he find among us 50 righteous? And God says he wouldn't do that. Verse 26, the Lord said, if I find in Sodom 50 righteous within the city, I'll spare all the place for their sake. I'll leave it there. Now, who's there? Lot. So the mindset is that Lot's been there, and Lot has made a difference. He's had some influence. So before we start pounding on Lot for not having a big influence, I wonder how many of us have righteous influence on 50 people? How many of us in our whole lives have led 50 people to Jesus? I mean, sat down with them and said, this is how you get saved. In the last 10 years, 50 people. In the last year, 50 people. Lot doesn't seem so unrighteous anymore, does he? By the way, 50 people, that's less than one a week every year. One a week. 52 weeks in a year. You take 2 weeks off. One a week. Have we had that kind of influence? Leading people to Christ or not? 50. Now it seems like a big number, doesn't it? Abraham says, well, Lord, what if we're five short? I know you said if we had 50, you'd save it. But what if we're five short? What if we only come up with 45? Verse 28, he said, last phrase, if I shall find there 45, I will not destroy it. He spake to him yet again and said, peradventure there shall be 40 found there. The Lord said, I'll not do it for 40's sake. Verse 30, and now are you getting embarrassed for Abraham yet? This is some kind of negotiation, isn't it? You ever try to sell a car? And you sell, you put a sign on it, say, you know, $10,000, and somebody comes up and says, I'll buy it for $10,000. And you think, maybe I should have said 12. Or you bought a car and you offered them $10,000 and they took it and you thought, well, maybe I could have gotten it for $8. That's what's happening here. Abraham said, maybe I started too high. Maybe my goals were too lofty. My expectations were too great. As he thinks about the 50, he thinks about Lot and Lot's work ethic. He thinks about Lot and Lot's spirituality, lack thereof. And he begins to doubt in his heart about his nephew, and he says maybe he wouldn't have been able to do that. Maybe he doesn't have the character, the influence, the spirituality, the righteousness. And he starts counting down from 50 to 45 to 40. Don't be angry. Peradventure there shall be found only 30 in verse number 30. And God says, I will not do it if I find 30. He said, behold, now I have taken upon me to speak to the Lord. Peradventure there shall be 20 found there. So 50, he went down by 5 and then down by 5. And now he's taking 10 at a time. Trying to find out where that bottom line is. What's the threshold? What's the minimum expectation? By the way, how are we doing as far as evaluating ourselves on the influence we have over people with spirituality? How many people we brought to the Lord? I don't mean who brought to church. I mean you influenced them for Jesus. 50, 45, 40, 30. And now he goes for another shot and he says, how about 20? I'll not destroy it for 20. Verse 32, oh, let not the Lord be angry. I'll speak yet but this once. Peradventure 10 shall be found there. He said, I'll not destroy it for 10's sake. Well, we know that Lot's own family could fill that void. Man, between his children, the ones that are married, sons-in-laws, we know him and his wife, two virgin daughters, that's 4. He's got other daughters and son-in-laws. 10 would fill the slot. So we think about reaching 50 people for Jesus. Now we're just talking about reaching our own family with the gospel. That's the difference of having an impact with many or even what happens at home. What's our reputation at home? Do the people who live with us and know us the best consider us to be righteous? Do they see Jesus in us? Do they see holiness in us? Or do they see holiness when we go to church, but different when we leave? 10 people. For 10, I will not destroy it. And Lord went his way, verse 33. And Abraham returned to his place. Why was Abraham asking for the salvation or the deliverance of Sodom and Gomorrah? One reason. Lot. One reason. Lot, his nephew. That's it. Go ahead. If we broaden our focus and not just try to reach that one, but try to make a difference. And as wicked as we know that Sodom and Gomorrah are, Abraham did not consider them enemies. Abraham didn't want them destroyed. He wanted them saved. Did he have some idea that maybe Lot was going to bring about revival? There was a fellow who went to a city called Nineveh. Y'all recall that? One guy, one preacher, with a message of destruction and turned the city upside down. Now, I know that he pouted after they got saved. But one person in a city that was a 3 days journey across. There's one person did that. So how much influence could we have? How lofty are our sights? Do we want to reach one or one family? Is it just because we're related to them that we want them to go to heaven? Or can we perceive or conceive the idea in our mind that maybe if we would really be sold out, we could make a difference? Did Abraham have that confidence in Lot? Well, evidently not. Because he went from 50, which was a reasonable number, all the way down to 10. And probably would have kept digging if the Lord hadn't cut him off. So it should challenge us in our prayer life and in our consideration of others, even in wickedness, that God would have mercy on them. Chapter 19. There came two angels to Sodom at evening, and Lot sat in the gate of Sodom. Now, this would be the marketplace, if you will, the market square. This is where business took place. Remember, with Boaz, remember he went to the gate to be that kinsman redeemer. So this is where the business took place. This is where the pillars of the community hung out. This is a place of posture. Lot sat in the gate, and Lot, seeing them, rose up to meet them, and he bowed himself with his face toward the ground, same way that Abraham met them earlier. He said, "Behold, now, my lords, turn in, I pray you, to your servant's house and tarry all night. Wash your feet, you shall rise up early and go on your ways." So he did the same thing, right, that Abraham did. So he learned something. He did at least learn hospitality, consideration toward others, because Abraham said, have a seat. I'll get you some water. You can wash your feet and relax. We'll get you something to eat. Lot does the exact same thing. But notice that now there's only two. With Abraham, there were three. And what was it that Nebuchadnezzar said when he looked in the fire? He said, and that other one looks like the Son of God. And so Jesus has not come with them on this part of the journey. So Lot extends to them the same grace, the same opportunity that Abraham offered. He did, you know, have those values. And there's maybe this sense of righteousness that righteousness that he had, he knew what kind of place he was living in. He knew that a stranger in town needed to be protected. Isn't that awful? To think that if somebody came to town, we'd have to protect them from the town people. How many of you want to live in a place like that? It's awful. If your friends come to town, where do you take them and drive them around and show them Tallahassee? I remember when I came the first time and went with the Hewitts. We ate seafood at Crystal River. And they drove me around, showed me all over. Showed me Southwood and FSU, the governor's mansion, all that stuff. Drove around, gave me a tour. Now, Lot doesn't want these guys to see any of it. Let me get you in the house. As soon as the sun comes up, get on your way. He's afraid to be there himself. He's afraid for what his city is, not what it's become, because it was already like that when he got there. And so he wants them to get on their way. They said, no, we're going to stay in the street all night. We're going to stay out here. Why? Because they're there to do a survey. They want to see the action. Okay, get this picture in your mind. Bourbon Street. New Orleans. Or Nollins. Anybody ever been there? I don't need to know what time of night it was. Just what, were you ever there? I did a wedding in Mississippi in Pascagoula. Didn't see any squirrels. And y'all are slow, but you got it. So I said, well, I'm this close to New Orleans. I've never been there. Let me go. And I got in my truck and I drove to New Orleans because I had a day in between. And I drove through New Orleans. And of course, what did I want to see? I want to see Bourbon Street. That's whatever. And so I drove. Of course, it was daytime. And I rolled my window down, quickly rolled my window up. And only stopped when necessary of traffic. Never got out of my truck the whole time I was there. But I've seen it on television. And I know what it's like in the nightlife and the activity. And that is the picture of Sodom and Gomorrah. Now, these two angels, these two messengers of God, have come to Sodom. And Lot says, you need to go in the house and we'll keep you safe. And they say, no, we need to go to Bourbon Street. We're going to stay out here. We want to see what this city is really all about. He says, bad idea. Bad idea. Y'all need to come in the house. He pressed them greatly, verse 3. They turned in, entered his house. He made them a feast, just like Abraham did, right? Before they lay down, the men of the city, the men of Sodom, come past the house round, both old and young. So this is a generational. I mean, this is everybody's involved, and from every quarter. So it's not like there's a good part of town. It's not like there's a good place where you're not exposed to this. It's everywhere. It's rampant. They called to Lot, verse 5, and said to him, where are the men which came in to thee this night? Bring them out to us that we may know them. Now, we know the biblical term, know. Adam knew Eve and she became his wife. And you say, well, Pastor, that's really not what it is. They're just wanting to have fellowship and communion and get to know each other. Okay. I mean, you can hold on to that thought for just a second. Verse 6, Lot went out at the door unto them, and he closed the door behind them. Y'all ever do that when somebody comes to your house? Come to the house and you meet them on the porch and close the door. No invitation in the house. Don't come on in. No, close the door behind them. Verse 7, I pray you, brethren. Ooh, he's one of them, isn't he? He's one of them. Do not so wickedly. What are we talking about? Yeah. It's not just fellowship. These are wicked sexual perverts, deviants. Now, we look at Sodom and Gomorrah and we understand the mindset there. This is today, young and old, in every quarter. Sexual sin is destroying childhoods. And I know that there's more information available today, right? We are able to get on the internet and we can see what's going on around the world, the news, and talk about these things. This is nothing new in our culture, the sinfulness. It's been around, but it's been hidden. And now it's surfaced. And Lot called them brethren. He even offers them his two virgin daughters. Now, I'll tell you something. Sexual sin is sexual sin. He was just replacing one sin with another sin. Verse 9, what's that? Right, he called them brethren. He's one of them. And they pressed sore, verse 9, even Lot, and they came near to break the door. But the men, the angels, put forth their hand. They pulled Lot in the house to them, and they shut the door, and they smote the men that were at the door of the house with blindness. Now they can't see. He said they can't even find the door. That's how quickly it happens. And the men said to Lot, now these are the angels, they were talking about the messengers, hast thou here any besides son-in-law, sons, daughters, whatsoever thou hast in the city, bring them out of this place. You have got to separate yourself from this place. You have got to get out of here. How many of us have ever been stuck in a life, whether it's a job or a family situation or relationship situation? We're stuck and we wanted to get out and we needed to get out, but we didn't feel like we could get out. We felt trapped. Anybody ever felt trapped in the situation? And here we are. And Lot, I mean, he knows better. He knows he's got no business living there. He knows he's got no business having his family there exposed to this. But he's become part of the culture. He sits at the gate. He's one of them. He calls them brethren. He's one of them. And it all started when Abraham said to Lot, our people are fussing. We're too big of companies, enterprises, empires, each of us. You pick any place you want to go and I'll go the other way. And Lot looked on the Jordan Valley. He looked toward Sodom and Gomorrah and he saw the lush land and he said, I want to go that way. And the Bible says what? You know this phrase. And Lot pitched his tent toward Sodom. And that was when he started going in that direction, he just kept going and he got closer and then he got deeper. And guys, I'm telling you, that's how sin works. So many situations in my mind right now of people who just, they weren't going to do that. They were just going to do this and they end up in over their head. And I don't understand anybody that messes with drugs. And I've had them sit in the office and tell me, no, I don't do that. I just do this. Well, let me tell you, this is too much. And it will lead to worse. We always think, oh, I can handle it. I can handle a little sexual sin. I can handle a little misbehavior. I can handle a little disobedience. Until you're in over your head. And so they pull them back in the house. They strike the men with blindness. They tell Lot, you got to get all your stuff out of here. He goes to his sons-in-law, verse 14, which married his daughters. And he said, up, get you out of this place. The Lord will destroy this city. But what did they think? They thought he was crazy. Has anybody thought you were crazy recently? If they don't think you're crazy, they're not, either they're not paying attention or you're not paying attention. People ought to think we're wacko at this point. Because I'm telling you, we're getting close to the rapture. We're getting close to the tribulation. We're getting close. They thought he was crazy. They thought he was one that mocked. Verse 15, when the morning rose, the angels hastened Lot, saying, arise, take thy wife and thy two daughters, which are here, lest thou be consumed in the iniquity of the city. The problem is this, he's already been consumed in the iniquity of the city. The sin is already in him. It's like having the church in the world, but not having the world in the church. And y'all know how it works with a boat, right? Where does a boat belong? In the water. In the shop? In the back of the showroom before you bought it, right? But once you get the water in the boat, we're in trouble. Verse 16, while he lingered. Well, I know it's wicked, and I know that these guys are bad guys, and I know it's old and young, and I know it's in every quarter of the city, and I know that it's had influence on my children to the extent that they think I'm a fool. I understand. But it's home. Y'all didn't see that written in there? Right? While he lingered. What are we waiting for? Why are we waiting to make the necessary changes that will save our lives and save our family? Why are we waiting? While he lingered, the angels, the men, laid hold on his hand and upon the hand of his wife and the hand of his two daughters. And so they got their hands full, don't they? The Lord being merciful unto him, they brought him forth and set him without the city, outside the gate. And they told him in verse 17, don't look back. Well, wouldn't that be great? To not linger and to not look back. Go ahead. I have an answer for you. We're going to get to it in a second. Hang on, because the answer is here. They put him outside the city, and they said, escape for your life. And then they said, run to the mountains. Go to the mountains, you'll be safe there. And he has picked up another habit from Abraham. He says, well, I don't really want to go to the mountains. I'm scared of the mountains. Can I go to the city? There's this little village in the valley, and if I go there, it'll be okay. And the Lord says, or the angel here says, well, we're going to destroy that city too, because they're wicked too. They're influenced. But if that's where you want to go for harbor, we'll spare that city too. So he goes to that city. He goes to Zoar. That's verse 22. And when the sun was risen up from the earth, when Lot entered into Zoar, then the Lord rained upon Sodom and upon Gomorrah brimstone and fire from the Lord out of heaven. Fire and brimstone. And he overthrew those cities, all the plain and the inhabitants. So all those other cities except Zoar. And while they were leaving, verse 26, his wife looked back. Don't look back. You ever notice when you tell somebody not to do something, it makes them want to do it? Especially men, right? But this case, his wife. She looked back and she became a pillar of salt. Abraham got up early in the morning, went to the place where he stood before the Lord, and he looked toward Sodom and Gomorrah, toward all the land of the plain, and beheld, lo, the smoke of the country went up as the smoke of a furnace. Verse 29 is your answer. It came to pass when God destroyed the cities of the plain that God remembered Abraham and sent Lot out of the midst. Guys, this is important. And we may even have some family members at home tuning into this that understand something. If it weren't for the ones who are faithful to God, they'd be in trouble. But because God sees the faithfulness of that member of that home, he blesses that one member, and because he blesses that one, the blessings pour over to the rest of the family. This is not the only example, but it's a good example. Remember when Jesus came to the Syrophoenician woman came to Jesus, and she said, "My child's sick," and he said, "Look, I'm here to serve the Jews and help them. And I can't take the bread that's intended for the children and give it to the dogs." And she said, "Let me be a dog that just catches a crumb that falls from the table." And he said, "Your child is whole. Go home now." Because of her faith, her child got better. And we got testimonies like that in here of people who stayed up all night crying and praying, and God touched their child and made them better. God helped Lot for one reason, Abraham. His sin, look, Lot had no credibility with God, but Abraham was the friend of God. Now, we can't go further because of time, but we find something that's very curious and offensive to our senses. And I should have read it, but I've already closed my Bible. We get to a point where the Bible says that Lot was in Zoar and he was scared of them too. Why? Because they were wicked. And so where did he go? To the mountains. Where the angel told him to go to begin with. He went to a mountain and lived in a cave. Guys, why does it take us so long to figure out God is always right? He always has the right answer in the right direction. Just listen the first time. So what did it do? It just delayed him. By the way, look back at Abraham. Because we're kind of jumping on Lot. God told Abram, leave Ur and go to a land that I will show you. But he made a pit stop along the way, didn't he? He said, well, let me stay here till my dad dies. And so they stopped halfway and stayed. And his dad died. He said, all right, let's go. Guys, we're delaying God's blessings, God's favor, God's protection by being disobedient, by making our own excuses. Lot gets up there, goes to the cave. His daughters realize that they are the only ones, or in their minds, the only ones left. Because in their mind, the whole world's been destroyed. It wasn't. And they say, we need to bring seed from our father, raise up children. Now, I know that that is offensive to us, to our senses. But understand this, in Genesis 20, up to Genesis 20, there's no prohibition to it. People always wonder, how did Adam and Eve have so many kids? Because they were male and female, that's how. Now, later on in the law, God says, look, you don't sleep with your daughters and your sons and your moms and your dads, your aunts and uncles, and he gave a whole list of people you're not supposed to sleep with. While it was offensive to our senses to hear them say this, and we think, how wicked, there's no prohibition. It's procreation. But we do know the children that were born to them became those who inhabit the land of current day Jordan, the Moabites. And they, by the way, where was Ruth from? Moab. So the story continues.
All right, any questions, comments? That was a lot, wasn't it? Three chapters. Let's take a break.